Are you sitting comfortably? Excellent. I'll be your narrator for this tale, and I must start by saying I have some good news and some bad news. The good news is, well, here we are, Kangazang, the legend, the epic, the, well, the book you don't have to read. So, just sit back and listen to the wondrousness. Oh, the bad news is, time is not on our side. I know, but the flame that burns twice as bright, oh, you know the rest. Suffice to say, I may be skipping a little detail from time to time. Well, this is because I have many things to attend to, and these things will come to light in the next episode of this universe-spanning saga. Well, I'm a very busy, omnipotent being, I'll have you know. And I'm in charge here, whether you like it or not. Far out in the deep, inky voidness of space, the imposing world of Imo Prime hung listlessly. Its ring of asteroids encircled it, spinning and colliding enthusiastically, hundreds of miles above the mottled black-and-white surface of the planet. To the passing observer, it looked rather like the severed head of a panda bear, surrounded by a cloud of gnats, only less furry and not as disturbing to see. Deep down on the surface, beneath the sullen clouds, there stood a great cathedral. A towering, ornate behemoth of Gothic design, dark and foreboding, into which a steady stream of shrouded figures shuffled, moaning softly, to pass the time on their arduous pilgrimage. The village meeting was in progress. The high priest, tall and spider-like, clad in elegant but dull robes, addressed the assembled throng of sour-faced listeners. "Mood apathetic," he called out. Replied the crowd in unison, both as an acknowledgement and answer. Looking out over the hundreds of pale faces, each one framed by curtains of black hair, the priest took a creaking breath and began his sermon. "To the highest on high, the gods of Imo and their desolate hearts, we send out praise to uphold the principles of the holy ABC. Apathy, boredom, and complacency, we dedicate our pointless existences. This day and forever, we yearn for the comforting solace of a dark and cold grave." It was a particularly cheery one, today's sermon. After all, the priest had some particularly cheery news to tell. He swept a wrinkly pale finger across his wrinkly pale forehead to clear his eyes of limp black hair. "Be thou warned," he began, accompanied by some serious finger waggage, "that the evil one and his accomplice are due to arrive at any time now that the planets have aligned. That he shall walk among us and spread the terror and fear that will end our lives." A visible shudder rippled through the audience, the desired response. He continued with vigour. "That they will bring upon us the plague and afflictions of joy, smiling, and," he paused for maximum effect, "laughter." The crowd began to mumble, clearly unnerved by the thought of happiness in any format. The priest read on, with a weird grimace crossing his crumply paper face. "And when they arrive, we must be vigilant. We must prove to the evil ones that we shall worry. We shall not be happy. Only then will they tremble in fear of us. And only then will we do what must be done to purge the badness of their spirits. He took another final deep breath. What will we do? In unison again, the crowd called back.
Kill them, kill them, kill them.
The priest was satisfied. Justice will be done, he thought. Our society is safe. But he was unaware that society as he knew it was about to change forever. Well, or for about an hour at least. Anyway, our story, like many unearthly stories, starts rather predictably on Earth. Well, except for the previous part that didn't, obviously. Well, you get the idea. Jeff Spooner sat in the barber's chair, getting his bi-monthly trim. He looked around the faux pine-clad walls and gazed at the flecks of mousy brown hair that slid down the apron in front of him. Haircuts seem to be taking less time each month, he mused, while the percentage of silvery grey seemed to be increasing. Surely they'd cancel each other out at some point. He looked up as far as he could without moving his head and saw that his hairdresser was wearing an odd tie-pin that bore a penguin in a fetching shade of pink. "Doing anything interesting this weekend?" asked Ray, the barber. Ray was in his early 40s, almost but not quite portly, but still quite energetic. He sported a rapidly greying set of hairdo and goatee, which made him look a little like a jazz musician. In his shirt, tie and white coat, he was always well turned out, as are most barbers, and full of interesting yarns, many of which made no sense at all, again, as are most barbers. Jeff looked up into the mirror to see Ray snipping away effortlessly. Yeah, replied Jeff. Sarah's birthday, innit? She wants to go to the theatre. Cats, I think, load of rubbish. I'd rather go down the footy, but it is her birthday after all. Ray nodded. Her treat, I suppose. Do they have a good choice, then, in the theatre? Choice of what? Plays? Said Jeff in slight confusion. Well, cats, said Ray. I wasn't aware they started selling pets there. Jeff blinked. No, mate, cats, the play, he began, thinking this might possibly be a wind-up. They don't sell cats in a theatre, do they? Ray looked embarrassed and tried to make amends. Oh, theatre! I thought you said the catter, Ray. Yeah, sorry, plays. Good choice. Jeff shook his head briefly to wake up his senses a bit. The internal rattling didn't help. Good choice of plays, yes. He decided to leave it at that. It was too early for surrealism right now. Jeff had known Ray, the barber, for nearly 10 years. They weren't exactly best buddies, but since Jeff met his fiancée and found that she was very exacting in the way she wanted him to look, he had to pop in for a trim regularly. Thus, he and Ray had struck up the beginnings of a friendship. Ray did have some minor eccentricities when he thought about it. Well, he was the kind of guy who never quite seemed to be on the same page as everyone else. And the lifestyle... Well, for example, he always refused an offer to go down the pub. In fact, Jeff had never seen Ray outside of his salon. He seldom talked about his family, except to say that they were far away. Cheers, Ray, said Jeff, as Ray whipped the nylon apron off him like a matador. What's the damage?
Oh, that's £1.07, please, replied Ray, picking a random figure out of thin air, and simultaneously opening his oldie-worldy till with a push of a button.
Jeff paused. £1.07? Have you put your prices down again?
Ray smiled sheepishly. Well, yeah. Or need to get some more customers. You know how it is, he mumbled, looking rather embarrassed. I'm a fairy, my name is Nuff, said Jeff, pulling out some coins.
Ray looked a little puzzled.
No, it isn't. It's Jeff. Jeff wasn't sure if Ray was really serious, so he let it slide. "You really should charge more, mate, seriously. The hairdressers down the road charge a minimum of £7 for a dry cut. You won't be in business much longer." Ray seemed to agree like it was a good thing. "Well, that's the plan," he said cheerfully. Jeff brushed some specks of hair from his neck and reached over for his jacket, which hung on a hook nearby. "So, you're off on holiday, then? Or retiring?"
"Oh, taking a trip, really. Going to visit my family."
"Ah, right. Where'd you say they are again?" asked Jeff, putting the jacket on. Ray closed the till.
Canada.
Taking a sidestep to allow another man to take the chair, Jeff nodded. "Oh, right, Canada. Ooh, bit nippy out there, mate. Make sure you wrap up warm."
"Well, I'll be on the beach a lot, if I can help it," said Ray. "Cheerio."
"See you, mate," called Jeff, as he stepped out of the salon. "Hang a banger," he thought. "There aren't any beaches in Canada." Then he chuckled to himself. Ray was always a bit of a peculiar one. Inside the salon, Ray smiled to himself. Jeff was always a bit of a peculiar one, he thought. But in all honesty, it was Jeff who was closer to the truth. Compared to him, Ray was the peak of peculiarity. So peculiar, Jeff couldn't even begin to imagine how peculiar. Jeff was in a bad way. He wished for a lot in his life, like everyone does, but tonight he'd wished that he'd caught the later bus to Sarah's house. He wished he'd not decided to surprise her by turning up unannounced with the theatre tickets and a bouquet of chrysanthemums. But most of all, he wished he hadn't stood at Sarah's bedroom door to catch her in a rather compromising position with the local reverend. And so, following a short bout of fisticuffs, Jeff's relationship was over. Thus, Jeff sat at the bar of the Red Lion and sniffed, watching his tears ploop into his unsipped pint.
"Well, I'm sure he won't press charges, Jeff," offered Glynn, the barman. "After all, it's not going to go down very well with his superiors. Ruin his career for such a young bloke."
To Jeff, this was hardly a comfort. It was her birthday. Birthday? I still can't believe she'd do this to me. I never two-timed her. I never mistreated her. I never once hurt her, he whimpered.
"Oh, you mustn't blame yourself, Jeff," said Glynn.
"Oh, no, I don't," he began calmly. But then Jeff shook like a long-dead volcano spurting into fiery activity.
"I blame her, that evil cow, that unscrupulous, scheming, sodding tart, that uncaring, unfeeling, bloody wench!"
Jeff never was very good at profanity. He took a deep breath and grabbed his jacket, leaving his snot-infused beverage to the purple-nosed old soak at the bar, who'd sat beside him witnessing the entire scene. He bid a mumbled, tipsy farewell to Glynn and left for home. As he ambled down the high street, munching one of Georgiou's special kebabs, Jeff wondered where his life was going. Most people in this life, or the next, or indeed the previous, only ever make big plans, decisions, or analytical forays into their own existences when they are either A, drunk, or B, unhappy, or more often than not, C, both. These three conditions are quite possibly the very worst time to make a deep decision of this kind. But then again, it may be the best opportunity to be completely honest with oneself. Or not. That's the beauty of alcohol and melancholia-induced psychoanalysis. Nothing, and indeed everything, is what it seems. Or maybe it isn't. But it could be. He turned the corner and saw Ray's salon. The shop lights were on, and there was some definite activity inside. A party, perhaps? Ray said he never touched alcohol, so why would there be music and life inside a barber shop at nearly midnight? He crept closer to the window. It was at that point that Ray stopped the CD of 80s hits playing and unlocked the salon door. He dragged the bin bag outside and headed for the huge garage adjacent to the shop. Jeff took a step back into the shadows of the wall next to him and watched as Ray unlocked the large chains that held the huge wooden door of the lockup. Jeff remained there, watching in silence, until Giorgio's special kebab did an acrobatic leap within his stomach, forcing out the loudest gurgling kaburp that he'd ever created. Ray spun around. He brandished his broom like a baseball bat. Jeff stepped out of the dark corner, both hands raised. Whoa, whoa, whoa! It's me, Ray. It's Jeff. Ray remained there, keenly alert and stunned. He shook his broom threateningly. Look, don't come any closer, he said desperately. Things would probably have gone a little smoother had Jeff not seen the spaceship in the garage behind Ray and thrown up everywhere. Jeff's ex-fiancée, Sarah, was also finding it difficult to come to terms with what had transpired only a few hours ago. Lying in bed alone, she gazed out of the window, looking at the clear, moonlit sky. But her face revealed a thin, wry smile. Her concerns were for the severely dented reverend who had been in her arms, and a few other places, earlier on that night. She smiled because she had managed to have her cake and eat it all this time, and now that her loser of a boyfriend had found out, she no longer had to deal with him. But suddenly the smile faded. A tear welled up in her eye as she realised that all was not quite well. Jeff still owed her 50 quid. Back at the salon, Jeff sat inside the garage staring up at Ray with an empty feeling in his stomach. The reason for this was literal. His stomach contents were outside the garage, doing a rather convincing Jackson Pollock impersonation. Ray had helped Jeff clean up and handed him a strong coffee, which helped. But not much, because he was looking at his barber building a spacecraft with a small heap of explosives piled underneath the shell-shaped ship. Was Ray some kind of terrorist? Jeff had to ask to get the issue out of the way. Tactfully, too, it wouldn't do to upset him. Are you some kind of terrorist, Ray? Al Pacino? Al Qaeda? Ray smiled warmly. Rather unlikely for an AK-47 brandishing nutjob. No, of course not. Don't be ridiculous. This was a big relief. Jeff sighed and took a long sip of welcoming coffee. I'm an alien. Jeff's coffee left the way it went in, only twice as fast. Only Ray seemed to be having a pretty normal sort of day. But at 2 in the morning, Jeff decided he might as well embrace the madness and go along with it. He resigned himself to the belief that at some point reason would soon slip back into the proceedings. Either that or a nurse would top up his medication and retighten the straps. I think it's time I explain myself, said Ray, pacing round the mottled ship. Jeff could only smile weakly as coffee dripped from his chin. Right. You aren't imagining all of this. I am an alien, and this is my only way off this planet. Jeff looked at both the insane craft and the insane barber. He could only assume that Ray had run through the crazy forest and hit every tree. Okay, Ray, but one question.
Only one?
Well, all right, a couple. How can you be an alien? I've known you for, well, at least 10 years. Ray took a deep breath of fresh dignity. My name is Barbara Sprambladak Fastalon Scump. Jeff couldn't help but snigger. Ray was prepared for this moment, thanks to his lungful of dignity, and so carried on regardless.
I've been stranded here since the 80s, when my ship got damaged by the atmosphere. Most of the outer shielding got burnt up, and I've been repairing it ever since.
Repairing it? With what?
With, this, replied Ray, delving his hand into the black bin liner and pulling out a large, itchy-looking clump of hair. Keratin, he exclaimed proudly. The finest transgalactic insulation shielding known to lifekind.
He sniffed the clump momentarily.
All right. So it smells a bit strange, but there's no denying its unique properties.
Jeff suddenly realised the smell was the ship, about the size of a tank. It reeked of brill cream, shampoo, and well, hair. He had a weird urge to crack a joke. "So, this is your haircraft?" he asked with a big smug grin. "Your hairship?" he continued, beginning to smirk. Ray looked tiredly at him.
Yes, Jeff. Aeroplane, hairliner, aerodynamic, helicopter. I've heard all the jokes long ago, and they weren't that funny then.
Do you have some more questions? Yeah, said Jeff. Is that dynamite underneath it? Are you trying to kill yourself? He asked incredulously, yet sensibly.
Ray stood up and pointed to the crates of explosives upon which the fibrous flying machine sat. This is for initial thrust. I don't have the power to escape the Earth's gravity field, so I have to use the explosive force of this material to get me up into the air, and from there I can pilot it out into free space.
Jeff widened his eyes. You mean to tell me you're going to get inside that thing and blow yourself sky...
Sky high? Yes, exactly, concluded Ray,
with a smile that defied sanity.
Once airborne, the wondrous properties of keratin take over, and whoosh, off I go.
To the casual observer, the spaceship looked like an oversized Brillo pad. Measuring about 30 feet in length, 12 feet high and 20 feet wide, it was a finely woven mass of thin hairs, twisted and thatched, with no visible means of propulsion or wings. It was pointed at the front, so it resembled an upturned rowing boat. Just beneath the outer layer of hair, there was what looked like a conventional spaceship, an inner shell of metal with glass portholes. A small array of computers with the standard flashing lights graced the inner walls of the cabin. In all, it was the sort of impossible-to-behold sight that would get one carted off to the funny farm double-quick time if one ever tried to tell somebody important about it. Jeff quickly realised this and shook the marbles inside his skull. All right, hang on. Suppose you do actually get into orbit. Where the hell are you going to go? Have you got oxygen, warp drive, a bog even? He was feeling like a non-swimming dwarf who'd just been flung into the Mariana Trench. Ray tried his best to explain.
Look, it's quite elementary. To be honest, keratin is made up of billions of cells that react to the vacuum of space, and they form a nearly impregnable shield against radiation, cold and space debris. But the best thing about it is, it's like a living solar panel. I can set sail on the solar winds indefinitely, at unimaginable speeds.
And what about oxygen?
I have a recycling unit, provides water too.
The bog?
Chemical toilet, $27.99 eBay.
Oh, well, so much for alien tech, then. Weren't you off to Canada, though?
Not quite, said Ray. Kangazang, my home planet. Lovely place.
I'm telling you, beaches of pure chrome. He sighed a little homesick sigh. Jeff had heard enough. He wanted to go home and lie down for a bit. A month would do it. Okay, well, cheers, mate. All the best with the Big Bang and all that, he began, but Ray put a hand on his shoulder, which made Jeff want to soil his undergarments.
Jeff, I need your help. I can't pilot this thing alone.
Jeff stood silent and trembling. Ray tried to sell it a little more.
Come on, Jeff,
he said, sounding like a barroom buddy who wanted to get a round in.
Think about it.
You need a holiday.
Why not take a trip to the stars and back?
I can drop you off anywhere you like. Anywhere?
Anywhere? Well, except Pluto, Ganymede, Tau Ceti, Emo Prime, and Swansea.
Well, why not Swansea? Have you been to Swansea? All right, fair point.
So, what you say? Are you coming along? It'll be fun.
And I'll throw in free haircuts.
What have you got to lose?
It was a tempting offer to a lovelorn, tipsy loser at nearly 3 in the morning. Jeff had a quick think, and his conscience postulated some theories. He could get space sick. He could get lost forever. He could be killed by some alien menace. He could die.
Oh, what the hell? Let's go for it, he replied.